Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Pret Cinnamon, Matt Duchesne for joining us in the last segment. Brought to you by Two Rivers Ford and Gary Ashton Remax Advantage. Great stuff there, Joe. And one of the things that stood out to me was just his comments about the vibe of this team. Just being different, being better, a little bit more loose in the room, and that translating on the ice. Obviously still very early in the season, but I do think that, you know, you've got to be really happy with the way that this team has started the season based on the quality of play that we've seen on the ice. And I do wonder how much just the difference in the room plays into that.
So who was the, like, who was the church mouse then who's gone? Obviously there was no way he was going to say, and man, it's really good that we got rid of this guy and this guy. But I mean, obviously when you think about that, I did go to, so who like said nothing in the corner last year, who's gone?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting point. And you think about the, just like the personalities they brought in. I mean, Nick Cousins, we heard him on Smashville Live last week. I mean, he's lively. He'll get in there on the ice. He'll get in your face. I think, you know, Mark Borowiecki, very, very similar in that regard. So they've definitely brought some personality into the room. And sometimes, you know, just loosening things up, getting out there playing relaxed, I think that can go a long way, especially with some of your star players, to kind of let them loose and get them out of their shell a little bit. So very interesting. We'll discuss a little bit more of that with Adam Vingan from The Athletic, who will join us at 9:30 as well. I want to pass along some quick news, Joe Rexrode. The Nick Saban coaching rehabilitation program marches on as reportedly former Jags head coach Doug Marrone is expected to become the new offensive line coach at Alabama. So Bill O'Brien going to be the OC, Doug Marrone going to be the offensive line coach. It's a former AFC South head coach party at Alabama.
Exciting stuff. And, you know, there's a Nick Saban's honorary former Tennessee football coach internship is open right now, too, for someone that I have a feeling might be ready to fill that job.
Yeah, there could be a person maybe that's been on staff before at Alabama that could be ready to fill that job. We'll see. We'll see what ends up happening with Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide. Going back into the Vols and something that we discussed to end the show yesterday, Dan Patrick comes out with a report on his show yesterday, kind of detailing what a source has told him has been going on with Tennessee and these recruiting violations that's led to, as Josh Ward put it earlier in the show, Tennessee turning into Meme U rather than Wide Receiver U, as they were formerly known on the internet nowadays. Here's what Dan Patrick had to say yesterday about what these possible recruiting violations could have been and maybe the method in which they were delivered.
I was told that, you know, there's a few things that are going on here. And I asked my source, I said, how did they get these assistant coaches on recruiting violations? And he said, well, they put money into McDonald's bags and gave them to the recruits when they came on campus. Some of the campus visits were not organized or they were not above board, but they were handing out cash. I don't know if it was through the drive-thru.
That's a Happy Meal.
So you literally had bagmen, and they put the cash in McDonald's bags and handed it to the recruits. My source said they were so in your face with this. They weren't even trying to hide it.
So that was Dan Patrick yesterday on his show. And as you can imagine, that has lit social media on fire with nice Photoshop jobs of Ronald McDonald becoming the next head coach of the Vols. I mean, Florida, their official basketball account last night, had fun after they waxed Tennessee 75-49 in that game and said that they were loving it with the sunglasses kind of emoji firing in after that. I mean, people are having a whole lot of fun with this on social media about the report that Dan Patrick threw out there about the McDonald's bags. But apparently, Joe Rexrode, people at Tennessee very angry about this and denying it profusely.
Well, and this is what's, I mean, a lot of players have reacted to this for one thing on Twitter, but I mean, I've talked to a couple people who think this is total BS. Now, I mean, if there's any truth to this and this is in the report, then, I mean, we really need to pick our favorite McDonald's slogan from over the years and make it the Tennessee football slogan. Now, everybody's, I'm loving it. That's like probably the most famous McDonald's slogan. but I think we do it all for you. That's my childhood McDonald's slogan.
Very nice. Very nice.
And I think that could work very well. We do it all for you.
That's good, too.
Have you had, you know, we'd love to see you smile. Let's not forget this one. Okay. This is also a good McDonald's slogan that, could work for. And here's actually a 2013 slogan ad campaign for McDonald's, a whole new way to love McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think you could kind of, now that was, I don't even remember that one, but that was technically a McDonald's slogan. If it's not in the report, if it's not in the report, I mean, then, you know, it's probably what people are saying, which is BS.
The damage is already done.
Yeah, the damage done. It's also funny, like, to think of the idea of, this is not how we cheated. We are way better at cheating than this.
We don't put it in McDonald's bags like it's 1994. We put it in accounts. Right. We put it in cars. All these other things. Yeah, you know.
Come on, we're way classier than that. We do Arby's. You know, I mean, it's you go a lot of ways with this. It's just, I mean, honestly, to be serious about this, again, like it's been a long time now. Where if you want to give someone money, you can do the bank card thing. You know,
yeah.
And I mean, you don't have to actually hand bags of cash. Now, like I said, preview something I'm writing for tomorrow. I've heard some incredible things that at least the coaching community thinks about various SEC schools and how they get kids money. It's pretty crafty. And some of it is handing out cash in discreet ways. I've heard of, you know, a lot of what you hear about with money and cheating is it's actually performance related, like you're getting paid. You know, if you guys remember the Auburn scandal from a few years ago, that was on HBO. They went on Real Sports, and it was basically like every sack is whatever, like $200, and you would just have it, you know, in your locker after the game. Things like that.
So you're saying if you get a sack for Tennessee, you get a sack of a McDonald's bag?
Maybe you do. But like, I'm trying to understand. I mean, I suppose, you know, if you are like, was this at the drive-thru? Was this there? Was it just like they had a bunch of McDonald's?
That's my question. Like, are these Tennessee coaches, if this is true and this ends up being accurate that Dan Patrick has put out there, that money's being changed over with McDonald's bags, like, are Tennessee coaches the one doing this? Do you have a fall guy at the McDonald's drive-thru in Knoxville? Like, how does this work? Is it like a dead drop like you have in Breaking Bad? I mean, I have so many questions. If this is true, how deep does this discussion run? Like, if there are, you know, fall guys at the McDonald's, like on the strip in Knoxville, I'd be very interested to see it and get to the bottom of it. Maybe on an edition of Vol Twitter, like you do on The Athletic.
I would love to think that this is true because it's hilarious. And again, like Florida already is trolling Tennessee with the I'm loving it tweet from after beating them. I mean, it's going to be endless. Here's my question. If it turns out, you know, like this, there's none of this in the report, it gets debunked, and maybe, you know, who knows, maybe there's details about how it actually went and had nothing to do with this. And basically it comes back around that like this is BS, which, by the way, with Dan Patrick, I mean, he had some stuff on the Big Ten that was totally wrong. Like, is this going to stop people from making Hamburglar and Grimace and Shamrock Shake jokes? It won't, will it?
That card has already left the horse, my friend. It is way too late for that. People are going to have fun with this. It's going to be awesome. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike texts in and says, the Hamburglar was the bag man for the Vols.
There you go.
Maybe so?
There you go.
So to answer your question, I think Mike just answered it for you. No. There's no way to put this back in the bag. Like, this is already gone. Doesn't matter if it's true or not anymore.
I mean, it's almost like, you know, like you may as well have fun with this. I feel like Tennessee fans are like, you know what? Let's just laugh. This is great. Let's just laugh about it all. You know, I mean, your program has already been blown up again. You have no idea where things are going from here. It's a big embarrassment. Why not embrace the whole McDonald's thing and have fun with it? You know, I mean, right now this is the McRib of football programs. Now, I think it can be a Big Mac again, but right now it's a sloppy McRib.
Just shows up.
All apologies to people who like the McRib.
Just shows up every once in a while. Yeah. Very well done, Joe Rexford. When we come back, we'll continue to get your reactions to the Vols. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Is the next Tennessee head coach set up for failure with the current situation at the program? We'll debate that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I can't tell you how many conversations we've had about the depths of this program. I remember in February sharing a platform with you on the river talking about Tennessee football and the optimism that seemed to permeate the air. And now this shattering event, and it just seems like this program can't ever get it right.
That was Paul Feinbaum from ESPN, also with the SEC Network, talking about the state of this Tennessee football program after the firing of Jeremy Pruitt, Philip Fulmer ushering into retirement once his replacement is found at the athletics director position. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, that's got us asking the question, how do people view this Tennessee job? Is the next head coach fighting an uphill battle? Is he set up for failure right from the start, regardless of who it is? As you throw that question out and consider all the different challenges that the next head coach of Tennessee is going to have to battle, are they immediately behind the eight ball and set up for failure right from the jump?
Well, it's hard to answer that question until you know exactly the depth of the roster blow up that's about to happen here. And I think, you know, I think some of those decisions aren't going to be made until the coach is in, you know, and the AD maybe will have some influence, but I think for the most part, probably a lot of guys on this roster who know they're good enough to, once they put a toe in the portal, they're going to have people after them, and they can wait and see what happens with the coaching situation. And, who, you know, maybe some will be swayed to stay, or most, or maybe a bunch of them will flee after that. But already we're seeing, you know, Big Cat, Bryant, who's brought in huge talent,
yeah,
brought in by Shelton Felton, and he has deleted his tweet about committing to the Vols. You can probably count him out. I know that my guy Ubbin just tweeted there was another decommitment from a D lineman, you know,
from
this
Buffalo.
Yeah, you're going to see more and more of this stuff. So that's my first question. Like, how set up for – I mean, Eric Gray is a guy, as soon as this all happened, and the first day when Trey Wallace reported on the investigation, they lost to Texas A&M. A bunch of us asked Pruitt after the game about Gray not playing. I mean, that's a guy you immediately think of. As to me, I could argue that the most talented players on this – roster projecting to next year would be Eric Gray and Henry To'o, and they very well might not have either guy. So I think I think there's a great chance that first season of whoever's coaching this team is a sub 500 season. But I also think that people have got to understand that.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Doug from Nashville, who wants to weigh in on the Vols. Doug, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, guys, I enjoyed the show. I'm not a smart guy, but I'm just going to try to tiptoe around a subject nobody's talking about. USC, they produced Reggie Bush and a Heisman. SMU, Eric Dixon, Craig James. Tennessee's cheating. They don't produce anything. No wins, no Heisman, no SECs, guys leaving. Let's face it, they're all cheating. When you're cheating and losing – I don't know if I can say sucks on the radio, but that sucks. He's not going to the NFL. I mean, what are you cheating for?
Yeah.
You look bad cheating and violations. I mean, every team that ever got into trouble still bounced back because people stay loyal because you're doing something for me. We're cheating. There's an end product that I go to the NFL. I'll still quietly support you. Eric Dixon ain't said nothing yet. These guys are cheating and losing.
Yeah.
Why is nobody talking about that?
It's pretty incredible, Doug. That's a great point. Like, it's what you're cheating, you're going 3-7. Like, it's not like you're out here just, you know, rolling over the talent. And look, Tennessee's got some talented guys. I think Eric Gray is going to be an NFL player. I think Toa Toa is going to be an NFL player as well. But you're getting busted for these recruiting violations, and you just went 3-7, and you look awful. It's one of the worst coaching tenures in the history of the Tennessee football program, and you get busted for cheating. So, to Doug's point, you can't even cheat properly.
Guys, we have to let a coach do 5 years of cheating before we judge him. Come on. His cheating had not yet reached its full potential. Now, listen, I think, first of all, great point, great call, Doug. that's, you know, you cheat and you lose, you're out of there. Now, I think Doug hit on something, and we have talked about this some of the last few days, about everybody cheating. You know, I think there's some Tennessee teams that have won championships that probably had a guy or two who may have had a little bit more than room, board, and tuition.
Probably so.
I'm just going to take a wild guess. Of course, no one – and this is where the whole thing – I mean, I could go on for hours and hours on this about how nauseous it makes me, because, you know, no one would ever want to, you know, admit that. What I want is everyone to show their cards. I want name, image, likeness, open market. Go ahead, boosters. Let's see what you're paying this kid to come to your school, and let's see a bidding war, because they should be paid for their talents, because they are part of a billion, multi-billion dollar industry, and they're at a time in their life when they are more marketable and able to make profits than at any other time in their life that they will be. That's what should happen, and we should totally destigmatize cheating. I don't give a crap. I hope you cheat. If you're a coach, you better be cheating. If I was a college coach, I would be cheating my ass off. Are you kidding me?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you got
so
to.
I don't care.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's just what this presser the other day, we're talking about, let's bring a coach in with integrity. Guess what? You're going to have a bunch of 2 stars and you're going to suck, and you go 2-10 and you're going to fire that coach.
Yeah, I mean, that's the state of modern day college athletics. And I think we all know that. Like, everybody cheats to some degree. Tennessee just apparently not very good at getting away with it. And again, if Jeremy Pruitt is 7-3, we're not having this discussion, because Tennessee does not launch an internal investigation. But it is amazing just how inept you could still be as a football program while obviously cheating on the side as well. Let's go back to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and bring in Chris from Nashville, who wants to weigh in on the Vols. Chris, thanks for calling in Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. The previous caller, you know, he was pretty rough on the Vols about cheating and not producing anything. And he's right. But what I would say is to kind of put everything in context. It's all relative here, and we have to understand that even though we aren't a rival to Alabama, they are our traditional rival, and we just happen to be going through a period where they're witnessing the greatest program in history with the greatest coach in history just south of our border. We're not going to do anything, no matter who we get, how we get, what we do. We are not going to do anything until we can create some kind of campaign that would entice Nick Saban to run for president. That's our
only. Thanks for the call, Chris.
I mean, he'd make a great president.
he probably would. I mean, that is part of it, too. I mean, look, can Tennessee do better than they've done the last 12 years, even while Nick Saban's doing his thing? Yes, absolutely. I mean, look at Georgia.
Look at
Florida. This is not the ceiling for Tennessee while Nick Saban is the coach at Alabama. Now, to Chris's point, is it a lot more difficult to recruit at the level you need to recruit when you have Alabama playing this way, when you have Clemson playing this way, which, as you said earlier in the show, Joe, that's traditionally been a territory that Tennessee has recruited very well in both Carolinas. Right now, Clemson's doing very well in that neck of the woods, obviously, with them being in South Carolina. So there are external factors from other programs that I think does make it very difficult for Tennessee right now. But to act like this is like the ceiling, I don't buy into that. You know, you can make the argument, I think the whole SEC is looking around like now, like, all right, what do we do about this Nick Saban guy? Because he has been so dominant and so good for so long that everybody, not only in the SEC, but in the entire country, is trying to stay with him and catch up to him. And Tennessee, along with pretty much every program in the SEC, has not been able to do that. But the floor is not what we've seen. They should be doing better than this.
Yeah, and totally agree. And I'm glad the caller brought up Nick Saban, by the way, on the subject of cheating. So I'll reach back again to covering Michigan State, to being a student when Nick Saban was at Michigan State, knowing guys on the team, still friends with some guys who played for Nick Saban in that era. Let me tell you something. Brian Niedermeyer and Jeremy Pruitt, you know, like they were both at Alabama before this. In fact, let's get our guy Drew Chester on here. Let me ask you this, Drew. Do you think that Nick Saban cheats? Do you think that Alabama is paying players left and right to play for Alabama, one way or the other? However that money gets in hands, do you think so or no?
I think we all know the answer,
really,
yes.
I desperately want an Alabama fan to say, no, we do it the right way in Tennessee. How dare you cheat? Like Stoop from Kentucky yesterday is on Kentucky Sports Radio, you know, ripping Pruitt for cheating and stuff. And it's like, man, just shut up. I mean, he's a good coach and he's done a real fine job. It's just this holier than thou thing, because you haven't been caught speeding. Like, you can possibly tell with a straight face, tell me that you never have sped in your life. It's a joke.
It is a joke. And look, that's what it is in college football. And again, you know what? Whatever. That's fine. If you're going to cheat, everybody else is doing it. That's just the name of the game. You don't have to like it. It's just the way that things are in college sports right now. I mean, look at Will Wade and everything that he's been proven to do at this point, and he's still the coach at LSU. It's obvious that if you're winning, people are okay with the cheating. It's when you start losing that it's become a problem, and that's what happened with Jeremy Pruitt and Tennessee. So, lots still to come on that front from the coaching search. It's going to be a crazy next couple weeks over in Knoxville. We'll continue to keep you updated here on Robbie and Rex Road. When we come back, we'll dive back into the Preds. Adam Vingan from The Athletic will join us. That's coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking about the latest with the Nashville Predators. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend, Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Adam, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Good morning. How are you?
We are doing very well. And Adam, three games into the season so far for the Nashville Predators, 2-1 on the season. What have been your impressions based on what you've seen from this group so far?
Overall, I've liked what I've seen, particularly in the two games against Columbus, not just because they won them, of course, but there seems to be a resilience with this group that perhaps was absent in previous years, and I believe Matthew Shane was speaking to that earlier with the two of you. I keep going back to that play in the first game that led to Boone Jenner's breakaway goal. A miscue by Dante Fabro near center ice, which allowed Boone Jenner to come in alone on UC Soros and score and put the Blue Jackets up 1-0. I think if that same thing would have happened to last year's team, they would have folded the tent, so to speak. You could have started writing your game stories about how they weren't coming back from that. But the fact that they did bounce back from it, they shook it off, and they got better as the game progressed, and I think you saw that on Saturday too. To me, it's sort of they're putting their money where their mouth is. You know, we heard a lot of talk over the off season and during training camp about how this team wanted to be tougher to play against. And to John Hines, being tougher to play against isn't about, you know, grit, so to speak. It's about mental fortitude. It's about being able to overcome adversity. And I think we saw that in the first two games. In the loss to Carolina, I mean, I thought they played well. Of course, hockey, as Philip Forsberg said that night, is a funny sport, and sometimes you can play your best and lose, and sometimes you can not play your best and win. So, overall, I've been encouraged by what I have seen through three games. I wish we would have had a game to talk about from last night, but of course that game was postponed. But at least the Predators seem okay and have not had any residual effects from being near the Hurricane.
Yeah, so Adam, you know, normally I'd ask you to if you agreed from your observations, you know, what Matt was talking about with us earlier about the room and about, you know, the I guess basically he characterized it as a little, maybe a little bit more lively, vocal, fun, et cetera. But obviously, who the heck can tell that from stupid Zoom calls? But do you what do you think of that though? Just based on talking to people and what you've been able to observe.
Yeah, you're right. It definitely stinks that we aren't able to be in the dressing room where you could get a better sense of what that is like. There's only so much you can tell from section 311 or 312 or wherever the press box is. I mean, I do have binoculars, but that doesn't help in terms of determining those sorts of things. I mean, it sort of goes back to what I was talking about before. There were so many instances in those two games against Columbus where if you would have just superimposed those game scripts onto last season, you could sort of, you know, write for the Predators what they would have said after the game. Oh, we got off to a good start. We didn't capitalize on our chances. They scored the first goal. We spent a lot of the game, you know, chasing the score, and then we had a push near the end, but it wasn't enough. Like that. That's what you probably would have heard. But you know, I look at those two games, and we didn't see the team's effort dip after they were scored on. We didn't see their effort wane over time. We actually saw it improve. Especially in the third period on Saturday where they poured it on the Blue Jackets. So from our perch way atop Bridgestone Arena, I think you can see what Matt is talking about. It's still early. We're only three games into the season. We should be four, but we're only three games into the season. So things can change. But for all of the time we spent in the offseason and during training camp talking about this team being tougher, particularly mentally tough, they are practicing what they have preached, at least from our vantage point.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Adam, you brought this up a couple of times with John Hines so far this season. Roman Josi and his shorthanded minutes out on the penalty kill are way down this year, obviously with Borowiecki and Matt Benning coming into the fold. Is that a good idea for the Predators to limit his minutes those way? How do you think that could benefit Roman Josi in the long run?
Well, I think it's a great idea, personally. I think it was last season Roman averaged around 2 minutes per game on the penalty kill. It might have been exactly 2 minutes per game on the penalty kill. And when I asked John that question, I think it was before the game on Monday, through two games he averaged 20 seconds on the penalty kill. And you're right, Robbie, bringing in Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning, and that's what John Hines talked about as well. There are players on the team now who are strong on the penalty kill. Not to say that Roman can't be on the penalty kill, because he has shown himself to be an adept penalty killer, but when you can remove him from those hard minutes and you can allow him to play on the power play more, get more even strength ice time, I mean, over time, I'm sure it only will benefit Roman. You know, sure, his ice time totals might be down overall because he's not playing on the penalty kill. But, you know, the benefit of having Roman on the ice, you know, if you have Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning, for example, do the heavy lifting on the penalty kill, then you can get a fresh Roman Josi over the boards once the penalty is expired. You know, that can only be a good thing. So I think that is a smart move by the Predators coaching staff. To save Roman Josi for the power play and even strength play that we know he can dominate.
What do you think, Adam, of both goalies so far, now that you've seen them both?
Well, Josi was spectacular in his two games. He stopped 71 of 74 shots. I thought Pekka was good too. You know, he made some really big saves against the Hurricanes to keep the Predators within striking distance. You know, I think both of them have played well, and I asked John Hines this the other day too. And he said that the number one goal, of course, is to play the goaltender who's going to help them win games. So if that means it's Josi, it's Josi. If that means it's Pekka, it's Pekka. But they're planning on using them both. You know, I personally believe that Josi should get more of the starts because of where he is in his career versus where Pekka is in his. I think I understand, you know, athletes and coaches in particular are in the moment type people, they're, you know, John Hines is only thinking about what's going to be the best for the Predators this season, but you also do have to think about next season and the season after that, you know, when Pekka might not be here and UC Saros needs to be, at least in the short term, a viable replacement for Pekka as the starting goaltender. We've talked about Connor Ingram. We've talked about Yaroslav Askarov. You know, UC Saros does have, you know, young goaltenders breathing down his neck. So, you know, it's no guarantee that UC Saros is going to be the next Pecorine, where he's this team's unquestioned number one goalie for 10 years. So I think it's important that UC gets the majority of the starts. Of course, if he really struggles and Pekka comes in and plays well, that's one thing. But as long as UC continues to play at this level, I do think that he should get he should have priority over Pekka.
So Adam, Mikhail Granlund is over here now in Nashville going through the quarantine process, and you figure it won't be too long until he's back into the fold here with the Predators. Once that happens and he's ready to go and get back up to game speed, what do you do with the lineup if you're John Hines? It's been interesting. You know, Cole Smith starts the season. Matthew Olivier has been in the lineup the last couple of games. So they've got some different options there. What do you do with the lineup once Granlund is back and is available?
Well, what I would do from an even strength standpoint is I would put Mikhail Granlund back with Matt Duchene. They played a ton together last year. They were, you know, they were basically attached to the hip on Duchene's line for most of the season. So I would put Granlund back on that line. Of the three, of the two wingers currently on Duchene's line, I would move Eric Halla to the third line. And then I would move perhaps Nick Cousins to the fourth line, because Cousins and Brad Richardson did spend time together during training camp, and they have the makings of a pretty solid quote-unquote fourth line. But it makes the most sense from an even strength standpoint for me to put Granlund back with Duchene because of their familiarity. What's interesting is, you know, despite playing together in Minnesota for several years and being, you know, very close friends, I don't think Granlund and Halla really spent that much time on the same line when they were with the Wild. So you could put Halla theoretically on that line and move Cunnan down, but I like what Luke Cunnan has brought to Duchene's right wing. So I would keep him there, put Granlund on the left, move Halla down, and then move Cousins down.
All right, Adam, off topic. I want you to think carefully about this question. If I were a college football coach and you were an assistant on my staff, would you cheat to bring in players?
I would try to be a bit less obvious than putting it in McDonald's bags. You know, I would probably get one of those big sacks with the dollar sign on it that you see in like cartoons and old, you know, movies. I'd try to be a little less obvious. No, you know, what's the old saying? If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
That's right.
So
except it's ain't. Yeah.
If you ain't, I'm sorry that I use proper grammar. But anyway, you know.
Yeah, or else I'd fire you. I'd fire you if you weren't cheating. I want you to know that.
I mean, as someone who does not claim to be a University of Tennessee football fan, but watching, you know, that press conference the other day, you know, I have a hard time. I'm impressed that the chancellor and the president were able to speak coherently with their lips firmly attached to Philip Fulmer's cushy. So I'm surprised it wasn't muffled, like, because, you know, they were just kissing his butt the whole time. But yes, Jeremy Pruitt, unfortunately for him, he was just bad at cheating. That's ultimately what happened. He was not good at cheating. That doesn't happen in the NHL, of course, but
sure.
You know, he's just bad at cheating.
Wait, I got one more. Do you think Mike Krzyzewski, your beloved Duke coach, has good integrity?
Well, according to Michael Avenatti, disgraced former lawyer, or I think he's still a lawyer, but a disgraced lawyer, you know, there were payments made to Zion Williamson. So if I didn't see them happen, it's news to me. So as far as I'm concerned, he is an unimpeachable coach, as far as I'm concerned.
There you
because
go.
I've seen no paper trail. Until I see a paper trail, he's done nothing wrong.
No McDonald's bags floating out of Duke under Mike Krzyzewski's watch. Adam Vingan from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, great stuff, man. We appreciate you joining us.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll react a little bit to what Adam had to say there and recap the news of the day in the AFC South as well. Some quarterback movement in the AFC South. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, Smashville Live returns tonight on 102.5 The Game, and tonight's guest is former Preds goalie Thomas Vokoun. The show will air every Wednesday during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m. and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. And something new this year, we are going virtual with Smashville Live, so that means you can watch the show from the comforts of your own home via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. So join us tonight and every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. this hockey season for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. For more information, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Brian Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, we mentioned it to begin the show. Not a good showing last night from Tennessee and their basketball program. It's not been a very positive week for Tennessee Volunteers and their athletic programs. They got hammered last night, 75-49 against Florida in a game that was going very poorly for them offensively right from the jump.
Yeah, it was not good. It was, I think it was probably just a flushable night. Not that you just say, hey, everything's fine, clean slate. Rick Barnes, there's going to be some good practices ahead for this team after that showing. And he specifically called out John Fulkerson and Eve Pons. Fulkerson took credit after, I mean, he took the blame. He said, I put this on me. I can't disagree with him. I thought he was weak. Pons, it was weird watching Pons last night because, you know, what was it like for about the first month of the season? I think he'd had like 6 points scored on him or something. And guys are blowing by him last night. He's not doing the usual, you know, roving around and erasing shots. And they just looked like they lacked energy. Then you take Jaden Springer out of the mix. Big loss. They need that. They need him badly. And then you have Santiago Vescovi shuffling around like me at the YMCA. And that's a formula for a loss. But Florida's missing a bunch of people too. I mean, you know, they don't have Scotty Lewis. They don't have Colin Castleton. I mean, that was a depleted, not very good Florida team that blew you off the floor. So it's one of those where you probably use some of the film to, you know, to shame some people as you get after it in practice. And a lot of it, you're going to have 2, 3, 4 bad nights in any season where you just don't have it. And then that, I think that's part of this too.
You know, the part that's going to drive Tennessee fans nuts, I agree. Like this happens throughout the season. Sometimes you just got to flush it and move on. But right now, and Josh Ward said this earlier in the show with us as well, it looks like Alabama's got the best team in the SEC. I mean, they are on fire right now. They destroyed LSU last night, got a big win against Tennessee as well a couple weeks ago. Alabama, we know how good they've been in football. Right now, that basketball team looking pretty good in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, Nate Oates is, I mean, he's a rising star as a coach. He's got them rolling. They just put it on LSU last night. And this is an example of a team. You know, look, I think when you're so built on shooting, that can be problematic. It can be problematic in the tournament. You have that one night where you go, you know, 5 for 30 and you're done. But right now they are shooting at a ridiculous clip. They let it launch. They've got shooters. They've got drivers. You know, and that team has not been great all year. I mean, they lost to Western Kentucky. They had to find themselves. But, yeah, I mean, right now that's suddenly your favorite to win the SEC. I mean, Tennessee doesn't get another shot at them, and they got a 2-game lead.
Yeah, so looking really good right now for the Crimson Tide on the basketball side of things as well. Joe, the news of the day today in the NFL, Philip Rivers has announced his retirement from the league, which means he will not be coming back to the Colts next year. One and done in Indianapolis. Philip Rivers, 17 years in the NFL. You look at his career, he's in the top 5 in a lot of categories, including passing yards right now. What do you think Rivers' legacy is going to be, and how big a deal is this for the Colts as they try to find what their next answer is going to be at quarterback?
Well, I think this is great for the Colts. I think this is great for Chris Ballard because he has all this time. He knows because he was going to be facing a tough decision if Philip Rivers wanted to come back. You know, I don't think it's a guarantee that it would have happened. Now it's like, okay, thank you. You made it easy for us. We got to go find a quarterback. And I really, again, we talked about him earlier. I really think Matthew Stafford in particular is a possibility there in a trade with Detroit, which I think is moving closer to wanting to kind of start its own clock with a rookie quarterback. Although I'm not sure that's the right move for the Lions, but usually they make the wrong move. And I could see the Colts fleecing the Lions and getting Matthew Stafford and being really good in the next few years with everything else they have built around other than quarterback.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jeff texts in and says, Mr. Doom and Gloom here again, Joe. It's not likely, but with Rivers retiring, if the Colts were to wind up with Deshaun Watson, hard times would likely return for Titans football. What do you think of that? Of maybe, you know, all the noise going on right now with Deshaun Watson, him ending up in Indianapolis with the Colts.
Well, look, maybe Bill O'Brien does this, but I don't see the Texans. I don't see the Texans even thinking about trading him in the division. And frankly, I'll tell you this: if the Colts were to get Deshaun Watson, they would have to give up a ton to get him. Okay. I mean, they're not just draft capital. I mean, they're giving up players. So, I mean, I think, like, you get a Stafford, you can give up a lot less to get him and still be great.
Agreed.
I mean, to me, that's a way better situation. The Texans are not going to trade him within the division.
You wouldn't think so. And like you said,
for the Titans, if you wanted him.
Yeah, I mean, and we've heard some people toss that out as well, the idea of the Titans checking in on Deshaun Watson. I mean, you could check in on him. I think of all the franchises probably in the league that Houston is the least likely to trade him to, Tennessee would be at the top of that list. So I would not expect that to happen with either the Colts or the Titans. And speaking of the Titans, Joe, coming out yesterday, A.J. Brown apparently had surgery yesterday on both of his knees and had a reaction video live on Instagram yesterday where he's feeling pretty good, a little loopy after the surgery yesterday, started talking about, you know, him wanting to be the best wide receiver in the NFL, wanting to retire as a Titan, but coming out that he's had surgery on both knees. Apparently, according to him on this video yesterday, they told him in week two that he was going to be done for the season. He finds a way to play through it, 70 catches on the season, over 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns, and obviously becomes a Pro Bowler. So it makes you wonder, like, what could A.J. Brown have done if he was healthy the whole season? What kind of numbers could he have put up?
Yeah, I mean, I think these are scopes, and, you know, they're pretty routine, but still, you got both knees needed it, and plus you have the ankle, and he was great. So, obviously, you think about next year, what if he is totally healthy, year three, having improved mentally in terms of, you know, it's not an easy position to play. You got a lot of reading of defenses, just like quarterbacks do. What a monster year he could have. I mean, I guess I have my doubts about, like, the season having been in jeopardy if he got scopes in September, you know, but regardless, that's some toughness right there. And I'm a big fan of all athletes doing this from now on. Give us the post-op video and let us know what happened.
Yeah, I think A.J. Brown may have started a trend here. I'm all for when you're done with surgery, let's just get this thing rolling on Instagram Live and see what we can come up with. So good on A.J. Brown for that. Really good. Really appreciate that moving forward.
Absolutely. Hey, real quick, I wanna say the answer Adam Vingan should have given me is that, yes, Mike Krzyzewski does have great integrity, and integrity should never be tied to stupid, archaic NCAA rules.
There you go.
That's it.
There you go.
That's the right answer.
Absolutely. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donica Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.